Penguin Random House Audio presents The Rebels. Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and the Struggle for a New American Politics by Joshua Green. Read for you by Philip Hernandez. For Chloe and Nick. Prologue. If you were to go looking for one event that shaped recent American politics more than any other, fueling the anger and contention that now feel endemic, eroding the nation's faith in its leaders, and elevating radical alternatives in their place, the 2008 financial crisis would be a strong contender. It was the point at which America broke down, political consensus went up in smoke, and long-standing assumptions about how society should be organized and for whose benefit came under scrutiny. Millions of people were toiling away at careers, raising families, saving for retirement, or going to school in anticipation of these things. When practically overnight, the global financial system blew up. Then, substantially as a result of that explosion, their own lives and careers and future possibilities began to come apart too. Major government agencies like the Treasury and the Federal Reserve moved heaven and earth to ensure that banks held together. But most people didn't get that kind of attention. Before long, a realization set in that their elected leaders weren't looking out for them. For many people, it shattered the faith in the democratic ideal we're all taught as schoolchildren, that government serves the common good, and that everyone has a fair shot at a life of decency and honor. Suddenly, that seemed like a mirage. The sweeping totality of the financial collapse and politicians' failure to engineer a satisfying recovery for all but the best-connected Wall Street financiers generated an intense anger among the millions of people who wound up on history's receiving end. Not just the deindustrialized Rust Belt factory workers who would become staples of Trump-era journalism, but also students, teachers, civil servants, homeowners, especially Black and Latino ones, and small business proprietors were left to fend for themselves amid the deepest recession since World War II. Many began to view their elected leaders less as instruments of their salvation, and more as the cause of their distress. The great onrushing force of their anger upended American politics in a way that disfavored established politicians in both parties, whom voters understandably blamed for the crisis, and instead created an explosion of interest in outsiders with unorthodox ideas. The clearest expression of this popular discontent came, of course, on the political right with the election of Donald Trump. I told the story of the rise of Trump's toxic right-wing populism and how it drove the greatest upset in U.S. presidential history in my last book, Devil's Bargain, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, and the Storming of the Presidency. But the 2008 financial crisis also produced a new strain of populism on the left. Or rather, it revived an old strain of economic populism that would have been familiar to Democrats of the New Deal era, but had fallen dormant in the decades before the crisis, when enthusiasm for regulating financial markets and suspicion of Wall Street banks were pushed to the margins. The crash brought it roaring back, and in doing so, raised a series of bedrock questions. How had the Democratic Party, traditionally the champion of workers, come to identify so strongly with Wall Street? Who made this happen, and why? What could be done to return the party to its working class roots? And who should lead the transition to a new era? This book tells the story of the new left populist movement that emerged from the ashes of the financial crisis to become an important force in the Democratic Party. The narrative follows three major characters: Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, each of whom was critical to the movement's rise and carries the book's story in chronological succession. All three played fateful roles in the 2020 Democratic presidential primaries, which were supposed to mark the triumph of left populism, but didn't turn out to do so. At least, not in the form that most people were expecting. Big epoch-defining shifts don't happen just because of charismatic politicians. Out of the public eye, people in politics are constantly building up the party apparatus and jockeying for advantage over their opponents. Winning elections and maintaining control require money and manpower. Sometimes the pursuit of these things has contingent effects that don't show up for many years. Democrats turned toward Wall Street in the 1980s is one such example. One man's effort to build a Democratic machine to compete with Ronald Reagan lit a long fuse that helped detonate the economy almost 40 years later. At other times, though, these party-building efforts succeed beyond even the hopes of their progenitors. Democrats' ability to harness the resistance protests that arose to counter Trump and eventually helped restore the party to power owed a great deal to a group of tech-focused upstarts whom most Washington insiders couldn't pick out of a police lineup. Their stories are interspersed here, too, because each helped bring about a transformation of the party that shaped American political life, sometimes for better, sometimes for worse, first in the 1980s and then again after Trump was elected in 2016. Part of what made the 2008 financial crisis so jarring was that it came after a long bull market and an economic expansion that appeared to produce a number of benefits. In the years prior, unemployment fell to near record lows. Easy credit flowed, and consumer confidence drove annual spending above $10 trillion for the first time. Home ownership soared, including among those who had been shut out in the past due to poor credit, racism, or other obstacles. In 2006, minority home ownership reached 52%, a rise widely accorded great social significance because homes are usually families' greatest repository of wealth. Now, at long last, blacks and Latinos were being cut in on the deal thanks to the miracle of subprime lending. Surely these positive trends would only continue. The period before the housing bubble burst marked the pinnacle of what Gary Gerstel and other historians call the neoliberal order. The idea, then widely accepted by people in power positions in both parties, that America's political economy should be organized around freeing markets from government regulatory constraints, because it seemed obvious to them that this was the surest, fastest way to increase everyone's wealth and well-being. It was true that anyone who cared to listen for them could find dissenting voices. In the Seattle street protests against the World Trade Organization in 1999, and the Million Worker March for better wages and an end to outsourcing in 2004, in the warnings of liberal government officials like the economist Joseph Stiglitz and the Labor Secretary Robert Reich, who served Democratic presidents and left disillusioned, and also in Elizabeth Warren's academic research and Bernie Sanders' political speeches, although neither was yet well known. These objections and other flashing danger signs were generally ignored or dismissed as naive carping from people who had not yet grasped the full wonder of the market's power. It was more congenial to believe that the economic arrangements governing American life were working splendidly, and that the dream of an equitable, multiracial, prosperous democracy was closer at hand than ever before. Both parties were thus culpable for the ensuing crash. But it was more damning for Democrats. Republicans had always been champions of light-touch, free-market capitalism for its own sake. But valorizing businessmen and bankers, elevating them to the highest positions of government, and heeding their judgments on how to run the economy, both before and after the 2008 crisis, were breaks from the party of Andrew Jackson and Franklin Delano Roosevelt that didn't sit well with many of its voters. What made Warren, Sanders, and later Ocasio-Cortez so captivating in the years after the crash was that each conveyed the sense of having a fully worked-out understanding of how the Democratic Party had lost its way and been captured by Wall Street. A big part of their appeal lay in their knowing exactly who was responsible for the mess and being unafraid to call them out. They satisfied the public's suspicion that bankers and
Sample complete. Ready to continue?